It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
News Podcast presents Bret Baier's All-Star Panel.
America's got to be in the lead if you want to deal with these threats. We're going to lead.
The morning is over. The Shiva is done. And if you're a conservative, you should be optimistic.
You know, my main priority right now is making sure that it delivers for the American people.
We have to make our country great again, and I will do that.
I think the president gets criticized by people all the time for the stuff he says, by people who ignore what he does.
Now, Fox's chief political anchor, Bret Baier.
1 month has passed since the brutal Hamas terrorist attacks on October 7th, with the Biden administration announcing this week they would be sending $320 million in precision bombs to Israel to support their fight against Hamas in Gaza.
As long as the United States stands, Israel will never stand alone. Today, in my fourth visit to Israel since October 7th, I reiterated that in all my discussions with Prime Minister Netanyahu, President Herzog, the Security Cabinet. I reiterated and made clear our support for Israel's right to defend itself, indeed, its obligation to defend itself. That includes through the additional assistance that we've worked with Congress and we're working with Congress now to provide for Israel's defense, as well as for urgent humanitarian needs in Gaza.
Congress has less than 2 weeks to pass the bills needed to avoid a government shutdown, with newly minted Speaker of the House Mike Johnson saying he's committed to passing all appropriations bills needed, even if they have to pass another stopgap to avoid a shutdown. For a conversation on this and more, we bring in our panel. Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today, Susan Page, Fox News contributor, host of the Ben Domenech podcast, Ben Domenech, and Fox News audio political anchor, Washington correspondent, Jared Halperin. Jared, the clock is ticking for Congress to get this stuff done. It's, you know, the same story a different month as far as whether it's going to happen or not.
And it may be a different strategy with a new speaker. We've heard Mike Johnson use this phrase, laddered CR. That was new to a lot of us who have covered these types of spending fights. In a news conference today, he kind of said, listen, this isn't anything new, that what they would look to do is maybe have full government funding for what they can get done, and then sort of have a tiered approach to some of the other appropriations processes that they can't get a year-long deal done for. And that would kind of be the laddered approach. But, you know, he also said today that they are kind of pursuing this through a different couple of options. And one of them could be what is close to a clean CR, I guess, as he was willing to go. He kind of said some changes. Was a little cagey on kind of what those details would be, but said that we can expect to hear them in the days ahead. It sounds like what's happening is the Republican conference, Bret, is trying to get on board with a single strategy before they get too far afield and start negotiating that either in public through the media or with Democrats.
Yeah, Susan, we still have the same math. It's still the same slim majority that Kevin McCarthy had. And actually, they haven't even changed the rule that would allow one member to step up and say, it's not working for me as speaker, a motion to vacate. So that hasn't changed. And what has changed is, you know, the embarrassment, obviously, of what happened. But how they get to the finish line is still anybody's guess.
Yeah, and let's not forget that this is exactly what cost Kevin McCarthy his job. This is what created an opening that Mike Johnson has now filled us when Kevin McCarthy passed the previous CR that got us to November 17th. To the displeasure of a few of his troops, they are still against that kind of what we call a clean CR, a funding bill that just kicks the can down the road. But it is, frankly, impossible to see how Congress manages to pass the regular appropriations bill in the next 10 days. So there will need to be some kind of continuing funding resolution passed. And we have no real idea what that will be, or how House Republicans will accept it.
Meantime, Ben, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell is telling the White House that there's going to have to be some negotiation on border security, some different financing of that in order to tie it to Ukraine funding, which is what the House wants to do to be able to get that across the finish line, too.
Yes. Minority Leader McConnell understands the dynamics here, I think, accurately, which is that the overwhelming majority of senators in his conference are really fed up with the issues related to the border. And they are, frankly, you know, speaking now in pretty confrontational terms about the need to include this because they understand the game that the White House is playing, that effectively, if they move forward on these, you know, international funding issues without doing anything border wise, that it's going to put House Republicans and Senate Republicans at odds. But when, you know, people like Texas Senator John Cornyn are sounding the kind of notes that they are, saying that this absolutely has to be part of this measure, and he's someone who obviously hasn't wavered in terms of, you know, support for Ukraine funding and certainly is supportive of Israel funding, as the vast majority of Republicans are, it's something that I think, you know, it sends a message to the White House that we don't want to be put in this position where we're trying to have to adjudicate, you know, with our own voters, a lack of funding for a border crisis that has been going on in ways that obviously our own network has covered extensively for months now in a very aggressive way that, you know, frankly, needs to satisfy the needs of our voters and our constituencies. I frankly believe that the White House is going to have to find some path forward that does satisfy these members, simply because they are enough of the Republican conference now to actually block something moving forward. And I don't think that they're going to feel the kind of pressure that they might have in the past, you know, on Ukraine funding in particular, that might have led them to take some kind of hit from their base on the issue.
Yeah, Jared, I mean, clearly the Republican caucus is split on funding Ukraine. They just are.
They are. But listen, I think as it relates to that border aspect, you know, that's going to be interesting to watch how it plays out. Because remember, this full supplemental money for Ukraine, money for Israel, money in the Indo-Pacific also includes about $14 billion for the immigration system, for the border. The White House insists that is a large investment for border agents. Republicans have said it's not really about the dollar figure. They don't think that that money actually does anything to stop the flow of migrants. It's more intended to kind of handle the number of migrants who are already here. So I think the Senate's probably going to push for some policy changes as well. That's where it's going to get, I think, really challenging for Democrats maybe to swallow some of these Republican proposals, because, you know, to that point, you are going to need buy-in here from Republicans to get this full supplemental over the finish line, especially if the plan here for the strategic plan here for the White House is to kind of show those differences that Republicans have over, say, funding Ukraine versus funding Israel, one or the other, or how to do both of those together.
And as split as the Republicans are on Ukraine, Susan, the Democrats clearly are split when it comes to Israel and what to say, what to do. The administration now pushing for this pause, a 3-day pause, we're told, is what the phone call was with Prime Minister Netanyahu, who has decided that's not what he's going to do, at least currently. And so there's a split there.
Oh, man, the divide in the Democratic Party is getting deeper and more bitter. It's along ideological lines among support for Israel and a feeling that the Palestinians deserve different treatment than they've been getting. It's generational, too. You know, you look at this very damaging, alarming New York Times polls of 6 key states, and you see what kind of trouble President Biden has with younger voters. And that was a core of his support that put him in the White House. Younger voters are much more likely than older voters to be worried about the plight of the Palestinians. And we have, you know, a censure measure coming up against Congresswoman Tlaib, who used a phrase in support of Palestinian rights that is seen as used as a call by Hamas to call for the destruction of Israel.
From the river to the sea.
Even the issue of that censure vote is one that is going to put Democrats in a tough place, because their party is divided and the White House is trying to walk this delicate line, and Netanyahu is not doing them any favors by continuing to take the stance he's been taking.
And President Obama doing any favors, Ben, for President Biden.
No, he's
the former president saying what he said.
Yes, he's definitely not doing him any favors, but I would just extend that divide even further. I think it runs through the administration itself. We have this incredible Politico report from the internal State Department staffer memo that went after Israel hard. It's a marked sensitive but unclassified. And it's an extreme sort of dissent memo, the kind of thing that, you know, I think would probably, you know, gain a lot of signers, perhaps from those younger Democrat voters and activists that Susan was mentioning, you know. But just to put this, you know, in perspective, it's a memo that says things like, the extent of human lives lost thus far is unacceptable, but that it refers to the thousands of Palestinians and not to the Israeli deaths that actually kicked this whole thing off. It's an indication of the level of divide that I think exists within not just the Democratic Party in mass, but within the policy community of the Democratic Party, which includes obviously an oversized number of people who served in the Obama Biden administration, who, you know, many of us suspect, you know, still look to former President Obama as kind of their lodestar when it comes to what they do on foreign policy, and who I believe, you know, is having an outsized role in shaping this response, which I think is effectively satisfying no one within that Democratic coalition at the moment.
We'll continue right after this.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. And I'm inviting you to join a conversation every week. It's the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to FoxNewsPodcasts.com.
Yeah, Jared, it's interesting to listen to Hamas officials talk about what they see, you know, what they want. And every time they're asked about, you know, a ceasefire, pause in hostilities, they say no. Their intifada continues against Israel. The fight will continue, you know, after being occupied for so many years. Then they say, well, what about civilian casualties? And the answer is each oppressed people have to lose people in order to win. You know, it's literally what the Hamas officials are saying that gets lost in the sauce here, in the back and forth about, you know, who's where politically.
Well, and I think you've gotten a sense of that, too, from the administration, at least the White House. You listen to especially John Kirby, who opened up the press briefing today, talking about that 1 month anniversary, how that felt, that we're only 1 month removed, and to consider Israel's response sort of through that lens. And for all of the dissent memos that seem to be coming out, these cables, the divide, this rift within the Democratic Party, it so far has not publicly seemed to sway President Biden's thinking on this, has it? He remains, he says, committed to Israel's ability to carry out these operations. John Kirby says that there's not going to be any armchair quarterbacking, at least in real time, to the targets that are selected by Israel, and that there are no conditions on the type of military armaments, military support that the United States is providing. Whether or not that is sustainable over the long term, I think, is going to be the question, right?
Yeah, I mean, Susan, the politics of this start to get in. We're still a year away from an election. But, you know, you look at the poll numbers, you look at Arab Americans down to 17% approval of this president in the latest polls that are coming out. It is somebody's, you know, reading that inside the White House.
You know, you said we're still a year away from the election. We are only a year away from the election. Yeah. We're just 2 months away from the Iowa caucuses. This campaign is well underway. We have our likely two nominees, barring something surprising and unexpected that would happen. And the politics is part of every consideration. Now, it's not the only consideration for the purposes of the White House, of course, but it is one of the considerations. And these new polls that show President Biden trailing Donald Trump in five of the six states he really needs to win to be reelected has sent alarm bells off for many Democrats.
And the question is, Ben, where do you go? I mean, it may send alarm bells, but no one has effectively told me how this change happens, if there is a change at the top of the ticket.
I mean, I think it is the realm more of Hollywood than I think of reality to imagine that a change is going to happen at this point. though it is still technically possible, obviously. So you saw some of the criticism directed from Senator John Fetterman at Gavin Newsom over the idea that he was kind of running a stalking horse candidacy. But, you know, this is the 30-year, you know, anniversary of that we saw, you know, of the rise of Bill Clinton, someone who came through the Democratic Party in a very competitive 1992 election. And become the president. And one of the keys to him doing that was having a sister soldier moment. You know, the idea that he was going to draw a line that basically said the Democratic Party is not this. This is not who we are. We do not accept this rhetoric as being part of who we are. And that was key to his election as a Southern Democrat following the three terms of Reagan and H.W. Bush. And I think that what I truly believe would right the ship here for this Biden administration is for him to have a more forceful moment along those lines that would push back against this rhetoric, that would say that there are lines that should not be crossed. And while I think that we are hearing consistency from people like John Kirby, I think the president could be more forceful in that, and that would go a long way toward essentially creating the opportunity for other Democrats, who I believe represent the majority of the party, if not necessarily the majority of young Democrats, to speak out and to say this is unacceptable. It's not a line that we're going to go down. And just like defund the police, there are risks here that we would not like to entertain to undermine us headed into next year's election.
Yeah, but Jared, on Capitol Hill, you're not seeing that slowdown. I mean, you're still seeing both sides, kind of two trains on this track, heading towards each other, even within the Democratic Party.
This happens, and Republicans have sort of gone through this as well, right? Trying to figure out what's our identity as a party, right? What's the national message? I think it happens more when you don't have the presidency, and I think that maybe that's what's most, sort of fascinating about this moment right now with Democrats is traditionally the president kind of sets the tone for the party, and everybody gets in line and goes along with it, and there has certainly been some disconnect with that, right? I will say that the polling is something that certainly is raising a lot of alarm bells. I went back and looked at some polling for the third year of a presidency over the last couple of decades, and they not always look real good either. And somehow, you know, incumbents have sometimes been able to overcome it. Sometimes they don't. But listen, I think there's a lot on the messaging side that Democrats are going to have to look at in the next couple of months here to see if they can maybe get more in line on a lot of these issues that seem to still have that party divided from their last primary 3 years ago.
Well, we will follow it all. Thank you, panel. Now for a bit of history. On November 7, 2000, the presidential election between then Texas Governor George W. Bush and Vice President Al Gore ended in a statistical tie. On election night, it all came down to Florida, but Bush's margin of victory in the state triggered a recount. After a month of legal disputes hanging chads over that recount, Bush was declared the winner of Florida by a margin of 537 votes after the Supreme Court weighed in on the legal challenges, leading to his victory in the election and becoming the 43rd president of the United States. That'll do it for this week. You can hear more of this series at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts. Make sure to leave a rating and a review. We want to hear from you. For Susan, Ben, and Jared, I'm Brett Baer. We'll see you next time. Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts, and Amazon Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Janice Dean, Fox News senior meteorologist. Be sure to subscribe to the Janice Dean Podcast at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And don't forget to spread the sunshine.